Welcome to Blue Crew Diaries, an Empire podcast. My name is Daryl, and I will be your host as we take a look behind the mask, so to speak, sharing stories, insights, and experiences from the unique perspective of the baseball umpire. In this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of controversies that have happened in Little League so far this season. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes, drop me a line at bluecrewdiaries@gmail.com. So if you're ready, grab your indicator and plate brush, and let's hit the field. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode here of the Blue Crew Diaries, an Empire podcast. Boy, what a interesting couple of weeks it has been. Had a little bit of controversy down in New Jersey and also had a little bit up here in Maine. So we're going to get into that in just a minute. But as always, some just basic announcements. The first one is to all of the umpires that are working the Little League regional tournaments, state tournaments, which are pretty much wrapping up, and the World Series tournaments. Best of luck to all of you. Having just worked a couple of state games myself, I know it is not exactly easy. So best of luck to all of you. Really looking forward to watching the regionals and the World Series. And watching the kids have some fun. Let's see, what else we got here? Again, as always, Little League Umpire Outreach Clinics are still going on. You can sign up for those on littleleagueumpire.org, the Little League Umpire Registry. Even if you don't intend to sign up for one of these outreach clinics or the ID camps, they're doing a bunch of those this fall. Those are on there as well. Even if you don't plan on signing up for any of this stuff, at least sign up for the umpire registry. A lot of good stuff on there. Yeah, and you can make yourself and your information as far as contact info visible to whatever leagues you want in your area. So if they need an umpire, they can contact you and maybe you can help them out. Also, there's the rules challenge on the registry. There's training material, just all kinds of stuff. Highly recommend it if you have not done so already. And if you are interested in really learning the rules, once again, California District 4, check them out on YouTube. A lot of good stuff there. As for me, I have pretty much concluded my season. It's more or less done and over with, unless I randomly get a call, which I don't think is going to happen because pretty much Little League is done in this area. All the state championships are done. There's really nothing left to do. So I worked my last two games this past week, which were 8, 9, 10, or some people call them 10U. And then others will complain, there's no 10U in Little League. Okay, 8, 9, 10, worked two state tournament games for that. It was different. It really was. A lot more pressure because it's a state, you know, championship tournament. Totally different venue than I'm used to. This is the first state game I've worked, and this is actually the first game that I've worked that has not had a team from the league that I normally umpire for in the tournament. So I feel very fortunate to have been asked to work a couple of the games. Let's just say the games did not go as I had hoped, but that's another topic for another episode. Maybe I'll get into that next month. But As far as this episode, yes, I know it's going to be a few days early, but we'll just consider this the August 2025 episode. But I wanted to do an episode on some of the stuff that's been happening, one of which, if you know, if you pay attention to Little League, I'm more than certain that you've already heard about it, and that is the Haddonfield, New Jersey bat flip. Let's just call it that. So, last week, on July 16th, a Little Leaguer from Haddonfield, New Jersey, Haddonfield Little League, cranked a two-run homer in the final game of the sectional tournament. Great hit. There's video all over of it. Hits a home run out over the fence. And then as he starts going down the first baseline, he flips the bat in the air. Now, how many times have you seen something like that? You see it at the Little League World Series. You see it in, even just regular recreational games. If somebody hits a home run or something, they throw the bat in the air. It's a celebratory thing. One of the umpires that was working that game ejected the player for the bat flip. And he pulled out the no horseplay card from the rule book. So, obviously, this got major attention because with that ejection, this player is also suspended from the next played game, which was their first game in the state championship tournament in New Jersey. So this player's parents decided to file a temporary restraining order against Little League to basically put that one-game suspension on hold so he could then play in the state tournament. It went to court, and the judge that heard the case basically said, you know what? This is stupid. I am going to lift the suspension, and he will be allowed to play. Now, the judge made a very good point with this. A good part of the reason that he ruled the way he did was due to the fact that Little League themselves have posted video on social media and all over the place of a player hitting a home run at the World Series, flipping the bat in the air as he's running down the, or he or she is running down the first baseline. It's almost like Little League is promoting celebrating. And that is essentially what the judge said. Like, you promote, you want kids to be happy, you want kids to celebrate, but then when they do celebrate, you just shut it down. Because, oh, well, he flipped the bat in the air. Now, yes, I understand there is a safety issue here, but if you watch the video real close, when the player throws the bat, first thing he does is look up to make sure the bat's not going to hit anything or anyone. He wants to make sure that the bat is going where he thinks it's going. As far as what the umpire was thinking and why he pulled out the horseplay card, if you will. He also pulled out the unsportsmanlike conduct card. But as far as what he was thinking and why he ejected this player, I don't know. I really don't. But everybody and their grandmother is now going after Little League about this. Well, you know, why are you suspending him and this and that and the other? Well, it's right in the rule book. In the tournament rules, if a player is ejected from a game, they are suspended from the next played game by that team. I mean, it's very simple. I think what a lot of people are upset about is the fact that Little League, upon finding this out, did not more or less reverse the umpire's decision. They just went with the umpire's judgment and, okay, you ejected him, so he's suspended. Period. Done and over with. Those of you that listen to this podcast that know me, that I've worked games with, or you've seen me work games, you will know that I have a very high tolerance for, let's just call it BS. A very high tolerance. As I alluded to in a former episode of this podcast, last year I literally had two managers, manager from each team, standing on each side of home plate, screaming at each other in the middle of a game over a possible obstruction call. And I did not eject either one of them. I should have. I mean, hindsight being 2020, they should have been gone. But I didn't do it. So something as simple as a kid flipping a bat? I mean, come on. Now, again, I can't speak for Little League. I can't speak for that umpire. But I think an ejection was a little extreme. You know, that should have been when the batter comes back around, hey, don't throw the bat again. Simple. Or you go to the coach. Hey, coach, can you please tell him next time don't do the bat flip because of this reason? You know, whatever the umpire's reasoning was. And have the coach talk to the player. And that's it. There's no ejection. There's no suspension. Now, if the kid does it again in the same game, after you've warned him not to, then yeah, that's worthy of an ejection. But the first time, I think a warning would have been more than adequate there. So those are my thoughts on that one. The next one that I want to talk about is the issue that we had up here in Maine with the state majors tournament. Now, some of you may have heard about this. Others may not have. So basically what happened was a majors all-star team from Gorham, Maine. They won their district championship and went to states. The state tournament was held in Machias, Maine. They were the host town or city, whatever you want to call it. I think Machias is a city. Maybe they're a town. I don't know. Anyway, the state tournament was held in Machias, which is like 3.5 to 4 hours away from Gorham. Essentially what happened, and I, you know, This is just information that I have from publicly available sources from both Gorham Little League and Machias Little League. This is all stuff that they have posted on social media, so I'm not making any of this up. Apparently, during the regular season, Gorham was not able to get all of their games in for at least some of their players. Now, for those of you who are unaware, Little League has a rule that in order to be eligible for All-Stars, you have to play a minimum of 12 regular season games. Now, I can understand why Gorham didn't get all 12 games in, because we had a hell of a lot of rain up here this spring. In fact, the league that I normally umpire for, we actually lost one of our two fields because it was a mud hole the entire season, or pretty much the entire season. The field was just absolutely unplayable due to the amount of rain that we got this spring. So we end up having to find other places. Luckily, we had a couple of other fields around that we were able to work games at. So Gorham apparently did not have that option, which I fully understand. I can see that. So at some point during the state tournament, one of the Gorham coaches was talking to a coach from Medomic Valley Little League out of Waldoboro, Maine. And somehow in the conversation, the Waldoboro coach found out from the Gorham coach that some of the players didn't get their required number of games. Now, this is where things get a little fuzzy as far as the actual events that occurred in the timeline of them, because it's basically he said, she said. According to Gorham Little League, Machias, who also obviously had a team in the tournament, and that team ended up winning the state tournament the other night. According to Gorham, Machias found out about this issue and went to East Region in Bristol, Connecticut. Machias claims that they found out, the Machias tournament director found out from the Waldoboro coach about Gorham's possible ineligibility. And once they found out from Waldoboro, then some other teams in the tournament came to the tournament director and expressed their concerns about Gorham's eligibility. And at that point, they asked Waldoboro to file the protest with Little League International. Now, like I said before, all this is a little fuzzy because some people are saying that everything I just said is true, but when Machias asked Waldoboro to file the protest, Waldoboro said no. So then Machias filed the protest, but Machias says Waldoboro filed it, so who knows? All I do know is a protest was filed with International. At some point, I'm going to assume that it was on Monday when all of this started to take place, Gorham filed for a waiver from International And basically what that waiver was asking was for International to allow Gorham's city championship tournament, allow those games to count towards the player's regular season game total. And that waiver request was denied. More on that in a minute. So the waiver request was denied by International. And at that point, International essentially kicked Gorham out of the state tournament. They already had one loss, so they were in the elimination half of the bracket. They then, on Sunday, the day before all of this started to unravel, they ended up beating Old Town, or essentially pounding Old Town. I think the score was 16-4. So that was Old Town's second loss, so they were eliminated from the tournament by Gorham. So on Tuesday, July 22nd, word came down from Little League International only a half hour prior to Gorham taking the field to play the team of from York. Word came down that Gorham's win against Old Town was now a Gorham forfeit. And with that forfeit, that brings Old Town back into the tournament because they didn't lose that game technically. And Gorham now has their second loss, so they're out. And that's it. That's pretty much what happened. Now, facts aside, here's where I stand on this. Now, I just need to throw this out there. All of the thoughts and opinions on this podcast are my own. I do not speak nor represent Little League International, any of its leagues, members, or players. So, my thoughts on this deal are, obviously Gorham screwed up. And it's not like they can say, oh, well, we didn't know. It's not like they were fact-checked and then, oh, well, we didn't know that we didn't have enough games. One of your coaches was talking to another coach about it. So, yes, you knew you didn't have enough games in, or at least some of your players didn't. And honestly, that's a problem. You should have filed for the waiver then, because if you think about it, you have your city championship tournament, and then you start your district all-star tournament, which took at least a week, and now you're on to states. I mean, at the end of the regular season to now, you've had at least a month to file for this waiver. And trying to put myself in, you know, how Little League thinks, and obviously I don't know how the tournament committee in Williamsport, you know, came up with this solution. But, you know, if it was me, I would look at this waiver request that they submitted when they realized that, you know, they had a problem at states. I probably would have looked at that and said, well, you know what? You've had at least a month to send us this. Now you're in danger of being thrown out of the state tournament. Is that the only reason why you sent this waiver in? Yeah. Maybe if you had sent the waiver in at the end of your regular season, we would have approved it. But now, No. You're just trying to cover your own rear end. That's how I see that going with the waiver. Again, I don't know for certain. I don't know how Little League thinks. But that's kind of my thought on it. So, obviously, there are a lot of people upset with Machias. And I think there are a lot of people who think that Machias saw Gorham as a threat, and that's why they filed this protest. I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about that thought process. Is it possible? Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put it outside the realm of possibility. That's for certain. I mean, we are talking about Little League Baseball here, so anything can happen at any time. But I don't really necessarily think that Machias saw Gorham as a threat to winning the state championship. What I do find interesting is, and I could be completely off of my rocker here, but what I find interesting is that Machias was the host city, and Machias went undefeated in the state tournament and won it. Interesting, is it not? I don't know. I don't know. Just a bad situation all the way around. The Gorham, one of the things that the Gorham coach said when talking to the local media about this was that Little League should not be punishing the kids. If they want to punish the manager and the coaches because they screwed up, go ahead. He said, punish the adults, don't punish the kids. I would like to know how he plans on, or how he would do that. Okay, if you're Little League International, how are you going to punish the coaches without punishing the kids? Because if you suspend the coaches, if you just take the coaches completely out of the equation, you are no longer the coach for this team. That is still indirectly going to mess with the kids, because now they're in the middle of a state tournament. They've got to get used to a new manager, or on the extreme end, a whole new coaching staff in the middle of a tournament. I mean, how does that not mess with them? So, it's pretty much all over and done now. Gorham had the long ride home, wondering what could have been. Old Town got brought back into the tournament. They ended up playing York. Obviously, the Tuesday game between Gorham and York was canceled. So, Old Town played York on Wednesday and got re-eliminated. And Machias ended up winning the state title, and they're on to regionals. So, let me know what you guys think on both of these little topics. If you are watching this on YouTube, leave a comment down in the comment section below. If you're listening to the podcast on your phone or wherever you listen to your podcast, send me an email, bluecrewdiaries@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. Give me your opinions. Should be interesting to see where things go from here. With the New Jersey deal. I have seen some comments from umpires stating, now I'm kind of worried about umpiring a game. Because, you know, if I call a runner out when everybody else in the ballpark thought he was safe, am I now going to get sued? You know, what is going to happen here with this? How far is this going to go? And it does have some people on edge. And that brings us to our question of the month. Seeing it is tournament time, we'll go into the tournament rules and see what you know. So this month's question is as follows. At a tournament game, how is it decided which team is the home team and which team is the away team? At a tournament game, how is it decided which team is home and which team is away? Yeah, send me an email, drop a comment, let me know what you think, and we will go from there. So that is going to wrap up this episode of Blucher Diaries. As always, thank you all very much for listening, and I will see you on the diamond.